Welcome to the Fight Life Podcast. I'm John Barbin, and as always with me is Brad Pilon. And today we're going to be talking about the difference between what you know and what you do. And this is kind of, this keeps coming up, and this is something we deal with on the blogs all the time, is, you know, people will read a lot about diet and fitness and, you know, read about anything. But reading and knowing, you know, something from reading it versus doing something and the knowledge you get and the experience from doing it are two totally different things. And believing something, especially when it comes to, you know, changing your body, the shape of your body, or going through something like that, it's different. It's different book knowledge and experience kind of knowledge are two different things. I like to call it knowledge versus applied knowledge. It doesn't matter how much you know about something from reading about it or hearing somebody else talk about it. It matters if you've done it, and you know you've been involved with it for real and seen it with your own eyes. It's one of the analogies I like to, or the stories I like to bring up is, you know, I did an undergrad and a graduate degree in nutrition, and our nutrition department was linked to our exercise physiology department, and I had a lot of nutrition profs who were overweight. So, you know, having even a PhD level understanding of the way the body works in nutrition doesn't make them know anything about actually how to apply it and actually lose weight.
Yeah, I mean, it is that obvious. Another great example is the armchair quarterbacks, armchair coaches, that sort of thing. Like it's very easy to explain how to do something, but to really believe it, you have to sort of done it yourself, right? And I know there's exceptions to that rule in general, but I mean, everybody's gone through that situation where you're learning how to do something and you've been instructed on how to do it, but you can't seem to get it. And then especially when you're a child. And then when you finally do get it, whether it's just, you know, the first time you catch a football or the third time you stop on skates or something like that, then all of a sudden you've done it. So you know it's possible. And you do it a couple more times and you're like, okay, I 100% believe I can do this. And then it just becomes, you've learned to turn it into sort of second nature. And it's a huge difference between knowing how to do it, as in being able to write down how you're supposed to do something, versus to actually have done it yourself.
Yeah, it's like in calculus when the prof shows the equation on the board and it makes so much sense, and then when you try it, you have no clue what you're doing. And until you can work through the equation on your own, you don't really get it yet. Like it looks like it makes sense, but you got to do it to get it.
And that's you just used the example of calculus to try to simplify something.
Yeah, all right. So I just made it worse. Yeah.
But it's a relevant point. Yeah, sometimes things look like it should be super simple, but it's not until you've done it. Oh, you know what's a perfect example, John, is directions getting somewhere. Right, someone can write out directions for you. It seems super simple, but then when you're trying to get there, it's really complicated, and you know you're second guessing yourself the whole way. But once you've driven it once or twice, then it's simple. You know how to get there. You believe in directions, et cetera. So, yeah, massive difference.
Yeah, and then, so I guess this gets into people trying to, now, and that was a good analogy, because I think sometimes people draw a very convoluted set of directions to get to the same endpoint when it comes to something like weight loss or changing the shape of your body. As far as you and I are concerned, we think it's a pretty simple straight line, and some people seem to draw much different line. So, like, for instance, the example of weight loss, it's just eating less calories. But other people will have you believe it's so many other things. And, I mean, unless you try it, you'll never really know who's telling you the truth and who isn't. And that's kind of like where sort of this sort of talk came from. Because people will read books about all kinds of stuff, like blood type diets, or, I mean, I'm looking at the shelf right now, fat flush and volumetrics eating, all these different things, like low carb and like the warrior paleo, like all of these. I can't even, there's just so many different ways. And you could, by the end of the book, you could think you know something about weight loss by reading one of these books. But unless you've tried it and experienced maybe what the underlying theme in each book was, which is just eat less, you don't know yet. You don't know actually how to get to the sort of the other end of your map.
No, exactly. And the interesting is trial and error. The easiest test would be weigh yourself. Don't eat. Weigh yourself. And be like, oh, okay, well, not eating made me lose weight. And then you can work out from there. But, I mean, you've got the example. Once you've done that and you have the belief, you're like, wow, I saw it with my old eyes and I did it. well, then you know that that is a logical, you know, approach. But it's that way with everything in life, right? Is that the goal should be to find the simplest way. And the best way to find the simplest way is literally to try it, right? Because it, the difference in being humans is what may be the simplest way for me may not be the simplest way for you, right? So for me, weight loss, the simplest way is fasting. Far and away, the simplest way. But, I mean, there are people out there who try it and be like, you know, I hate it. I just don't like the idea of not eating for 24 hours. So even though it's on paper simplest, to them, they're like, if you hate it, don't do it, right? So you have to find simplest, but you have to find simplest for you. And the only way to really do that is trial and error. So a diet book that makes a lot of sense, and you try it, and you're like, this is horrible. Well, then obviously that's not, you know, it's A, you're not taking the simplest approach, and B, obviously there's something wrong with the logic behind that diet. If you're sitting there thinking this is horrible and you're not getting the results that you think you should be getting. Same thing goes for quote-unquote muscle-building workouts. I mean, if you just slaved away at a muscle-building workout for 8, 12 weeks that was guaranteeing you 30 or 40 pounds of muscle and you gained zero, right, well, then you're going to have to look at that and go, maybe I shouldn't bother with that again. Right? So, but it is. It's the difference between what you think you're doing and what you are doing. Right. So.
Yeah, and you can only. Yeah, well, that's a good point. And you can. There's only so much you can try to cram in your head on the knowing side versus the doing side. You got to kind of. I mean, it's okay to do research. I mean, that's how you researching stuff and trying to come up with something to try. Obviously, starts. With some kind of information collection, data collection somewhere, but eventually you got to put some of it to the test. You can't just keep collecting ideas and not use any of them or not try any of them. I mean, that's all a scientist is doing, right? Or that's all people that do research do is they try it. They just test it and see what happens. And then they just report back on what happens. Like, you got to be your own, this was my blog post today. You've got to be your own little experiment of one. Like, if you don't test it, well, it's no good in a book until you try it.
And the only problem with that is that a scientist or someone with an advanced science degree knows how to properly test something. Whereas for the most of us, it's very hard to figure out what was if A was actually causing B or if A was just happening at the same time as B. Right? So only problem with being your own test is it is what you have to do, but you have to be very aware of what you're doing. Right, so I think it was really interesting what you said about reading diet books versus losing weight, because I think that something we should be aware of is that for almost all diet books on the shelf or available online, if the author did indeed write the book, which I mean may or may not be the case, as a lot of these books are written by ghost authors or ghostwriters, but if they did write the book, I'd be willing to bet that they lost weight first. Then tried to figure out how it happened and wrote a book about it.
Or, okay, totally, I'll go with you on that one. Or they recognized how simple the actual way of losing weight is and realized that's not a great book to write and came up with a more convoluted way just simply to have a catchier book.
Yeah, and see, I don't think that a lot of people, not a lot, I know there are people who do that, but I don't know a lot, I don't think all of them do it that way. I think that a lot of them lose weight and try to figure out how they lost weight by going online or going to the store and reading books about weight loss and then piecemealing together their own science behind it rather than being like, wow, I was really good at eating less and working out and I lost weight. You know, they want to dive deep into mechanism, right, and trying to explain. I mean, I think we've talked about this before, is messing up knowing what happened, I lost weight, for knowing why it happened, or the mechanism. Right? I lost weight because of the interaction between these 8 hormones, 3 enzymes, and whatever else. Mm-hmm. Right? So I think a lot of it is that people are successful at losing weight, or even gaining muscle, right? And then they try to figure out how or why it happened by looking at books and magazines, et cetera, and piecemealing together the common thing. And that's where you get your diet book from. So in that case, it's them confusing, almost going backwards, right?
Yeah, totally.
What they did with what they say they did.
Oh, yeah. And then if you And see, they had the advantage of never reading the book in the first place, but just doing what got them the results.
Exactly.
And then you're at the disadvantage of reading their convoluted,
misinterpreted interpretation
of what actually happened, yeah. And you could end up not getting your results because you're trying to follow some ridiculous scheme that they thought might be what happened when all they did was eat less. And that gets into the paralysis by analysis, by reading too much and worrying about, am I doing it the right way? Like, some people can't even get started because they read too much. They read too many different theories. And if you read enough diet books, you'll realize, if you pick just 10 or 20 random diet books, they all have testimonials. They all talk about somebody who's lost weight. And you'll eventually get to the point where they all contradict each other to the point where there's nothing left to eat.
Yeah, like, your style would be good. You can't eat anything. And you can't eat any specific style. So like, I'm stuck. I can't do a thing.
Yeah, like you can't eat raw vegetables, but you have to eat raw vegetables. You can't eat meat, but you have to eat meat. It's got to be low carb. It can't be low carb. It's specific kinds of fat. It's certain times of day, but it's not certain times. Like, by the end of it, you're like, if any one of these theories was right, that means all of the others would have to be wrong. But if all of them have ever produced results, that means they're all wrong to some degree. Or at least they're all telling you.
And they're all right to some degree.
They're all right to some degree. So the point is, they're all a convoluted way, getting back to the map analogy. They're all just a longer way to get to where you're going. To actually lose weight, all you do is eat less.
Yeah, but I think a part of it too is the interpretation of what happened. Because, if you were the author of one of these books and you lost weight, and then we're looking backwards through time trying to figure out how you lost weight. We're playing that game of trying to remember what happened and then trying to tease out when A caused B as opposed to A happening at the same time as B. And it just becomes your own version of the story, right? You and I go out to a bar. I come home and tell everybody how I owned the dance floor. You come back and tell everybody how I made a fool of myself on the dance floor, right? It's just different interpretations of what happened. What happened was, I went to the bar and danced, right? But it's everybody
owns their own story. Let's be clear, and made a fool of yourself.
Yeah, and made a fool of myself, but I'm damn good at it. But it's your own interpretation of the story. And then, because we're all human, exaggerating is a harsh word, but it's a word I'm going to use, is exaggerating the right parts of what happened to make an entertaining story.
Right.
And we all do it. Like, we do it from as something as boring and monotonous as describing your drive home from work. Right, if you hadn't described it to someone, you would pick out some way to make the story at least interesting enough that the person would just walk away mid-sentence. Right, so if we do that naturally, then we're trying to recount to you how we lost weight. Explaining it as, well, I ate less, and then I ate less.
And that's it.
So it's boring, right? So you have to be like, I ate less, oh, and I tried this new quinoa bread, and it was amazing. And then all of a sudden, the quinoa bread happened at the same time as B, the weight loss, or did A, the quinoa bread, cause B, the weight loss? It's just everything now becomes open for interpretation and the creation of a better story. So it does fall into the what you did versus what you say you did, or what you do versus what you say you do. Right? Like it's
like finding out what the magic trick is. Like I'm sure we've all seen some kind of card trick or something that just, we just could not believe how it happened. And then the minute we figured out how it happened, you feel dumb for ever believing it. And second, it's never that impressive. Like, it just never, like, it's always something so simple that
you feel foolish.
You feel completely foolish. And I think that's the same thing with weight loss. It's like, oh, is that it? Like, you kind of feel, then you feel silly for being impressed by it. Because you're like, oh, is that all? Really? It's just,
all those people in this transformation contest figured out how to enjoy eating less. Oh, okay. Right, and then you're like, well, wait a second. You know, if they ate less for 12 weeks, they must have found a way to at least make it tolerable. And then that's the secret. And then when you find out the way they figured out how to make it tolerable was because, they weren't following rules 1 through 13 that you thought you had to follow, and that's when you feel foolish.
And I guess that's where it becomes interesting because, and this gets back to what you'll do, it's what is it that you can do to actually eat less? Like, I mean, then I get to the point where everyone's doing it differently. Even though it's less, how you arrive at less and how I arrive at less are going to be just two different things.
Right.
They can be similar. They can overlap in certain areas. But it, but it's always going to be unique. And I always say this, just about, you don't know how anybody on earth eats unless you live with them. And even then, there's moments in the day and there's days in the week when you're not with them 24 hours a day, and they have things they do when you're not around. And specifically, and this is why you will never, ever know how anyone actually eats 100%, there's a way people eat when they're alone that you'll just never know about. And most of them, I mean, it could even be your spouse, may not tell you. There's certain things people keep to themselves. There's certain things that are private. And food is super intimate and super private, especially when you're eating, like, the alone part of the way you eat. And but, you know, obviously you don't know about it because by definition I'm talking about when they're alone or when you're alone. Yeah. And whatever you've done, you know, whatever you've eaten when you're alone, and, you know, every now and then you might eat something weird or binge on something. I don't know. You just, maybe you've just got a weird habit that you even think is weird even though it's you. Well, everyone else has that too. Like, everyone else has things they do when they're alone. And they,
I
just
polished off a quarter bag of Chippets before we did this call.
Yeah, you did. That's awesome.
But that's the thing, right? Is that would be something that no one would have. And I'm dead serious. I polished off a quarter bag of Chippets and shit off that wouldn't be in the house.
Right.
But the things that people would do that, you know, you generally would not expect or think about, right? So in doing that, I'm still, you know, I'm eating in foods I enjoy. I just don't stress about food and stuff like that. But it's what keeps me going, what keeps me, you know, enjoying food and enjoying eating less. But you're not listening on this call. If someone told you that I said I did that, you'd probably be like, no, Brad's into health nutrition. You probably wouldn't do that. But yeah, I killed it.
It's awesome.
Yeah. Another good example, a little less embarrassing, but back when I worked in the stuff industry, we used to do a lot of trips to China. A lot of the raw materials at the time were coming from China. And I was always amazed by how they ate. You know, I always thought that they didn't eat a lot over in those areas, and I was just outside of Shanghai in a lot of the, I was really outside of Shanghai in a lot of the sort of more industrial areas, and blown away. I was like, I didn't think they ate this much, and like every single meal we go to is like, you know, a buffet of fantastic food. Weird foods we had never had before, and some I don't want to ever have again, but lots of food nonetheless. And then so on one of my trips on the cab ride back to the airport, I was telling my translator, I'm like, I'm blown away by how much you guys eat. You know, you must have a fantastic metabolism because you're all so lean and you eat so much. And he looked at me like I was, you know, the most ignorant North American in the world, which apparently I was. And he's like, we only eat like this when you're here. Like that, it's a major, major business expense when you come visit because we eat like this for you. We never, never eat like this when you're not here, ever. And I was like, oh. Right. So if I hadn't asked that question and brought it up, I would have gotten a plane, come back, and I would have told everybody, you know, how it's amazing, how, you know, there must be something phenomenal about their metabolism, et cetera, because they eat a ton and don't put on weight. And in reality, they just ate a ton in front of me, but the minute I left, it ended, right? Like, it was just a big, giant business expense because I was there.
And they're probably assuming everybody in North America wants to eat like that, and they're like, how do those North Americans do it?
Exactly, where I'm going home the trip being like, I'm not eating for a week. Right? Like,
yeah, so no one in on either side of the table, nobody was being genuine.
Yeah. You know what was really funny is they kept getting a kick out of making me like chug beer and stuff. But their beer glass, it wasn't even a half pint.
No.
So I was like, you're kidding, right? But it was, you know, they expected it being a Canadian. Right? Like it was all about getting beer. It wasn't wine, it was a thing. They had to get the Canadian guy some beer. So that they could watch me chug the beer, and I was going like, "Really? This is." But then I realized, yeah, it's just sort of stereotypes and expecting people to eat and act in a certain way, which is, you know, contrary to the way that we actually, you know, eat and drink, especially the way we eat and drink in private. So
And that's a really good point, along with our theme of what you know versus what you do. You can know better and still not do it.
Oh yeah.
That's basically the whole. That's why the diet, health, fitness industry thing exists, is because it's become readily apparent that it doesn't matter what people know, they still won't do it. Like, even if you read something and you know you should do something a certain way, or you think you should do it a certain way, you still won't do it. It's the reason why you'll buy any more than one diet book. Because if one diet book works, and you read it, you believe in it, and it works, and you did it, well then why the hell would you need another? But if you read it and then don't do it, and then read another and don't do it, you're adding on the what I know side of the equation, but you're not adding on the what I've done or what I'll do side of the equation.
Well, yeah, no, absolutely.
And I think the more you pile it up on the what you know, you can actually get yourself to a point where you're incapable of doing anything because you don't know what the word no keeps coming. You don't know what to choose out of all the things that you think you know.
Yeah, and you even lost me a little bit there, but yeah, I see where you're going with that. It's just that you've given yourself so many options, and you've logicked all those options into making some sort of sense, that at the end of the day, you really don't know what to do. That's when you see, I will take this out of weight loss and move into the gym with this one, is you get to see people get to the point where they just walk in the gym and just confused. They have no idea what to do because, you know, they've been sold on how cool it is to powerlift, Olympic lift, bodybuild, CrossFit, circuit train. Yeah, like it feng shui training. I don't know what it could possibly be, right? But it gets to the point where they get in there like I have no idea what the right thing to do is. I know I'm supposed to be here, and I know there's a million different things I should do, and they all kind of do the same thing. And then what happens is this is where it gets really interesting, is they start, because we are very visual people, they think of the images of the people that were used to promote the article or you know, diet program, and then they're trying to pick the image of the person that they'd like best, and then pick the workout, right? Which is then, of course, is completely odd way of doing it, because that image may have nothing to do with that workout. It may just be picked as a cool image, or that person may just now be promoting that way of training, or that person, you know, may have been paid to be the model, what have you, but we just sort of pick randomly. But that comes from the paralysis that came from knowing all these different styles and being sold on or marketed to how great each one is. And then, of course, in the marketing for any one specific style of training is the anti-marketing for the other styles. So now you know 8 styles, the benefits of all 8, the negatives of all 8. Just going like,
right, and
way easier when I was in high school, right? Like,
right, and then the feelings of frustration build up, and not wanting, and part of it isn't, part of not taking action is to do with the opportunity cost of the thing that you're not doing. So if I choose exercise routine A, I might be paralyzed from choosing it because I'm more worried about not choosing B. So right. it's like, oh, but should I, since I can't do both, I can't really pick which one's better. I'm more worried about the one I'm not doing and what I'm losing than the one I might try and what it might get me. So it becomes an emotional thing. It's kind of interesting. The long-term thought, it's easy for us, or at least it makes sense for most people to logically decide, oh, I should do this for the benefit then. Like, if I eat less over the next however many weeks, I will have, you know, improve my health, improve the look of my body.
So
then
taking it out of a weight loss situation, you know, if I don't spend $3 on a coffee, then I will have $3. Something very simple like that.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. But our moment-to-moment actions are much more controlled by our emotions than our logic.
I just want that damn coffee.
Yeah.
Even though I have to save $3. Like, it's imperative that I have $3 cash on me for something.
Yeah.
But I want that coffee, I'm just going to spend it and deal with the consequences.
Right. So in the moment, the battle is constantly with your emotions. It's the battles between your logic and your emotions. So what you know is your logic. What you'll do is typically your emotions. And, you know, sales work that way. What's that?
Reminds me of university. The last call at the bar, you have $10 in your pocket. You know that was the money for the cab ride home, but you go and buy drinks today.
Yeah, exactly. So you're acting on emotion then.
And 100%.
And we almost always do that. And you know, with things to do, which, like the coffee analogy, the bar analogy, the weight loss analogy, working out, anything, what you'll do on a moment-to-moment basis is basically largely controlled by your emotions. And then somewhere in there, what you know gets trumped by your emotions. Now, what you believe is the kind of the third aspect in there. That's not, again, belief isn't centered where your logic is centered. Those are kind of two different sections of your mind. Once you...
You mean actually physically not centered in the same spot?
Oh, yeah, yeah. When you look at fMRI studies, two different sides of the brain light up when you're doing logic and when you're in a belief like when your beliefs are being tested. So there really are two different things. So we've got the emotions of what you'll do. We've got what you know is kind of your logic. And then your belief is kind of tied into what you're actually going to do. But your belief has to come from some experience.
And does the belief trump everything then?
I think so. I think your core belief at some point, well, I don't know if it trumps everything, but I think it's
needed, I would say.
I would say it's needed to get, like, it's needed to get somewhere, to start doing something in line with your emotions and your logic. To get them in line, they have to, I think, at least land somewhere on a belief.
Because just taking it back to just Eat, Stop, Eat, just because something I'm familiar with, I always find the people who do the best with Eat, Stop, Eat are the ones who have read the book, reviewed the research, and really believe. They're like, okay, like I can fast once or twice a week. I'm not doing anything wrong to my metabolism. I'm not losing muscle. I'm going to lose weight. I believe this. And they're the ones who have the best results. The ones who have the worst results are the ones who read about fasting but didn't read Eat, Stop, Eat, start fasting but are still really scared that they're ruining their metabolism or losing muscle, so they don't have that component of it. So even though they have the logic, you know, they've read a couple articles here or there, since they don't have the emotion and the belief behind it, it tends to fall apart much quicker for them.
Yeah, it's kind of like I suppose you could read your way to some degree of belief, and then you can like sort of like rivet it in by actually acting on it,
yeah.
And then now you've sort of kind of downloaded it into your consciousness for good. So like I can tell you a compelling story, or you can feel like you believe it by the end of hearing us talk right now. And then when you actually go put it into practice, mm-hmm. you've got, that's kind of locked in now. Like it becomes like a pattern that's in your brain that's not going anywhere, because you're like, it made sense. I believed it when I heard it, and then I did it, and now I really believe it. Like there's no turning back now. Like it's like there's no way to tell you otherwise once you've put it into practice.
Mm-hmm. Which then is actually a very dangerous thing, because if you, I'm getting back to confusing A cause and B with A happening at the same time as B, is if I sell you on my diet program, and my diet program has you eat less, but I tell you that's not the reason why you're losing weight. You're losing weight because of the hormone, the Brad hormone. Right? And then, but you read my book, you believe me, you do the diet, you see weight loss, and you tie it all together being like, holy cow, it has nothing to do with eating less, it is the Brad hormone, I would 100% believe, then you now become the person who will go on every single blog, every single chat room, and just gospel the Brad hormone to death, because you've mismatched things. Right?
Yeah, oh yeah, and that's where belief and logic don't add up.
Right. Because, well, you've sort of made them add up, but they've really just been, wow, you've been marketed into it, which if you think about it, is extremely scary.
To believe something doesn't require logic at all. I mean, and that's blatantly obvious. I mean,
yeah, okay. But you can believe something and then have the logic presented to you, which then would, of course, make the logic seem more logical. Oh, I'm messing up this.
Yeah, I don't know what you're talking about.
But, you know, I mean, if you've already bought in and then you have the logic presented to you, you want it to work?
Oh, you mean the even if it's erroneous, but the logic that goes along with their current belief system.
Yeah. You want it to work, right? Like because you've already slightly bought into it, even though the logic may not be 100% kind of what you heard, because you've already bought in, you're going to make it work, which is the opposite of having the logic explained to you, being extremely skeptical of it, really analyzing it, then trying it, and being like, okay, wait, no, that did work. And then, so you've gone the opposite way, right? Where as opposed to buying in and believing and then having logic presented to the point where you really want the logic to be right. Which right. Unfortunately is a way that a lot of science is being, if not conducted, analyzed right now. Is it, you know, just by the title of the paper when you're perusing through PubMed, you find one that you really think supports what you believe, right, then you're automatically going to read through it and try to logically into making sure that fits.
Yeah.
You're going to find things to support what you believe. So now you're forcing, in terms of the what you think versus what you do, you're forcing them to fit together.
Right. So I guess the three of them, in an awkward way, are mutually exclusive to some degree. But I think what you do is more tied to, I guess it's more tied to your belief than what you even know. So
yes.
Belief can trump logic, even though, you know, if you're trying to get something done, especially if you want, you're looking for, I want to put this action in and get this result. It would stand to reason that your belief should stem from the logic, not
well,
it shouldn't be two separate things floating around, like separate from each other.
No, but think about the amount of people who want to lose weight, right? And will do everything but eat less. Even when they do eat less and they don't lose weight, instead of eating even less than what they were doing, so less than less, right? They will, because they have decided that's not part of their belief system, or even though it is fairly logical, they'll just keep looking for other answers and they'll stay in the same spot. Like for extended periods of time. Just assuming, trying to logic the way out of the obvious answer, which is just, you know, eat even less. Right? Or
yeah,
do
something
differently.
Like
do something differently. And that I think that's the key point, right? Is it
right.
What people think they do versus what they do. The difference there is that everybody likes to think that they do things extremely differently, and no one really ever wants to do anything different or anything they're not comfortable with.
Right, because in other words, that moves them out of their belief system, and they have to learn. It's painful. You have to accept the fact that you had an erroneous belief, and then now you have to find a new one. And that is more difficult than sort of fitting the reality to your belief. So, you know, people who fail to lose weight can come up with a million reasons why they're the only one who can't do it. Their metabolism's broken. They haven't found the right mix of calories. All of these illogical, completely illogical things. But each one fits nicely into the belief that they're the one that can't get it done. And that they're the one that's hard done by. And that their life is that much more difficult than everybody else's. So if that's your core belief that you're not going to allow to change, then you have to, by definition, you have to take the illogical stance that everything else that can be proven scientifically to be, you know, the actual answers, you're just going to explain away that, no, that's wrong. Those are all things, those things just couldn't possibly happen, at least not to me. And then you get yourself living in a world where, like, the rules that govern the rest of the world don't work in your world, or they don't apply to you,
right.
which kind of makes you incongruent and incompatible with the rest of the world, which I guess you don't, you know, nobody wants to be that way. So I guess at some point, to make these kind of changes or to accept this sort of stuff, you eventually have to accept that we're all kind of playing by the same rules.
Well, I mean, you're delving into, like, relative and quantum physics, but basically what we're trying to say is the exact same rules that govern, you know, the movement and functioning of things like black holes also govern how your body works, right? They all work under the same principles. You can't just say I'm different because it's the same stuff, the same general way things work, the same rules that apply to the way your heart beats, applies to the way that a black hole is formed. Same sort of rules. So you can't fall out of them. I know we've taken this really, really far out of weight loss, but it works.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And then, so what I'm trying to say is eventually what you know and the actual logical what you know eventually is going to win out, and it once you start acting on the logic and the what you know side of things, and let that sort of, that's got to be part of what you believe, that's when you'll actually start getting a result.
Yeah, but how do you do that? That's extremely hard, right? Because it becomes...
Well, yeah, I know.
Especially for weight loss, because we're just trying to make sure that people come away from listening to us ramble with some sort of actionable item. You know, if you're not getting the results you want to get doing what you're doing, obviously you have to do something different, not just more of what you're doing, but different. But it's figuring out which different is right. That becomes the hardest part.
Okay, that's a good one. So I guess, so then how does this all fit together? And you just touched on it. Nothing's, you only get a result from things that you do. It actually doesn't matter what you believe or what you know. It matters what you do. So your actions are driven by partly what you know and partly what you believe. I guess if you're not getting results you want, clearly you have to do something differently, and how you choose what to do is going to determine the next step. So you have to maybe be able to accept that or be able to look at yourself and say, am I functioning out of belief or am I functioning out of logic?
Well, I think the main thing too is that the severity of the difference sometimes to make your life simple and to make something effective. If we use the example of your commute to work, if your commute to work is horrible, right, then, you know, you've tried two or three different routes and it's still horrible. The solution isn't more different routes to work. It's quitting your job and getting a new one that doesn't require you to go through downtown during rush hour. Right? So it's different is sometimes a massive drastic change, right? It's not just, okay, this time I'm going to take this one side road over here. It's literally, okay, if I want to make my commute better, the job has to change. That's different. And that's the simplest approach, but it's the scariest, right? The hardest thing I think a lot of people have to do in their lifetime is knowing when it's finally time to quit a job. And typically, you do that about, 3 months to 30 years late, right? So, yeah. But, same thing is with weight loss, right? Sooner or later, you're going to have to, figure out that, okay, you know what? It's not eating 150 grams of protein versus 300 grams of protein versus 200 grams of protein. It's like, okay, no, I just got to eat less of everything, including protein. Right, just picking on protein just because it's sort of an obvious one. But there's lots of different ways of, it's not, if it should be 8 meals a day versus 6 meals a day versus 13 meals a day, or is it just less, right? Even though that's the most uncomfortable one, which is the scariest, right? More often than not, when something's not working in life and you have to do something different, sometimes that different is drastic and it's off. Often it's an option you weren't considering, and this happens with us a lot, right? It's when you're like, when someone else sees it, or you look at it from a completely different view, from a kid's mind, is usually the best. And if you explain to your 8-year-old kid that, daddy's commute is horrible, and no matter what road I take, I just can't seem to get there, and find a way that I like my commute, your kid's probably going to say, well, get a new job or buy a helicopter. Right, and number two, you probably can only get the new job. So if you look at it from the kid's point of view, sometimes you find that right answer. But as an adult, admitting the massive difference between what you think you're doing and what you are doing is extremely difficult because we've been marketed to and conditioned to so much to think in a certain way that it's almost impossible for us to figure out what's the logic versus what's the belief versus what's the emotion. I think that's where we're going with this.
Yeah, and the belief thing can blind you from options, like actual options. You have one of the best stories about this was, and I think it's in How Much Protein, when you were talking about sitting with the researchers, and they said, well, Brad, if you believe that much protein needs to be in, the product you're trying to build.
Yeah, well, we're talking about a muscle-building product, and this is back in the day when I worked in the industry, and I just had someone challenge me, and they were, a group of people I really looked up to, and we were talking about a supplement, and I wanted to add more protein into it, and, they kind of looked across the table at their muse, and like, yeah, Brad, look, if you believe in protein, we'll put some more into it. And I thought, what? Believe? Who are you saying believe to? Because in the scientific community, that's kind of like slapping someone right across the face, right? So, and that's when I stopped. I'm like, hey, what did these guys know that I don't know, or what do I know that this group of six people are clueless to? And that's when all of a sudden it's like, wow, completely different scope. It forced me just to explore the option of, maybe you don't need 500 grams of protein per day to build muscle. Maybe that doesn't make a difference. But sometimes you need someone to give you that contrarian view of, like, I'm arguing amounts of protein, and they're sitting there going, like, it doesn't even matter.
Right, that's the moment where you realized you were functioning out of belief and not knowing.
Exactly.
Like, you believed in it, but they knew. You didn't know. And then you eventually knew. You're like, oh, I didn't have any reason to believe that. And you just, you thought you knew, but they knew, and you were functioning out of belief.
Yeah, and of course, if you look at that long term, that forced me to eventually quit a really well-paying job and go back to being a student in grad school. So, Yanis, if you're listening, thanks a lot, buddy.
Yeah, great way to go.
Yeah, great job paying well. And you drive me to go back to school and live like a student for a couple of years in my 30s. But in actual fact, it was a great thing because it really opened my eyes to really the fact that I was viewing nutrition through the standard marketed lens of nutrition and the way it's marketed to us, and it forced me to to go back to school and really question everything. So it was a good thing, but like just like we pointed out, you know, the right answer is often the scariest. It takes you down a very different path.
Right. Okay, so, well, I mean, we should wrap this up and fit this together.
Yep.
I guess when I was thinking of this topic, the things I came up with were that there is a big difference between what you know and what you do, and then there's a third piece in there that's what you believe, and that you can solidify belief by doing it and, you know, and seeing it happen, and that over the long term, even if you know something should be a certain way, in the short term, it's largely your emotions that are really going to control what you do. And, you know, over time, you have to experiment with things and see if you can bring what you know and what you do. So bring your logic and your emotion closer together so you're actually doing things that get you to the logical end that you want. So if weight loss is what you want, but emotionally right now you want to eat that slice of pie, and you really want it, you think you'll do it, you think you'll actually eat the pie, but you know you don't, you shouldn't. Eventually, your belief system's got to kind of put those two things together to get you where you want to go.
Yeah. I think another point with weight loss, just to tie this up, is in terms of, you know, what you do versus what you know, what you think you know, there's a lot of diets out there that will be effective because they probably should eat less, right? But regardless of why you think they're working, right? So, you know, as long as you're eating less, but regardless of why you think it's working, if it's working for you, you know, just, you don't have to change it, right? Because even when people argue back and forth over that, you know, the fact, the mechanism you think is working is stupid, you know, and it couldn't possibly work, right? It doesn't matter if the mechanism's wrong. If you're enjoying the diet, so just a flip side, this, John, so there's a positive bit, right? If what you're doing is working, then even if, you know, the reason you think you're doing it or the reason you think is working is wrong, no, it doesn't matter. If it's working for you, it's working with you, and if you're enjoying it, stick with it. Does that make sense? Yeah. And that's why with Eat Stop Eat, like, we're always like, you know, we don't care how you eat on the time when you're eating, as long as you're enjoying the way you eat and you're eating less. And we mean that. We're not trying to be mean and we don't care. It means it's, you know, if being a vegetarian is a way of eating that you really enjoy, great. If being, you know, if eating the paleo style is a way you enjoy, great. Right. And it doesn't, the mechanism or whether or not it's good for you or bad for you is regardless if you're getting the results you want.
Well, I mean, I think by definition that means it's good. It's good.
Yeah, exactly. And, if it's getting the results and you're happy, bingo.
Right. Then that's what you want. That's what you wanted in the first. With what you just said there, I think that the disconnect there is it's not what you know, it's what other people know and they're trying to impose on you.
Ah, beautiful point.
Right. So like in that case, don't let what somebody else thinks they know get in the way of what's working for you.
Yeah, so get in the way of what you're doing.
Right.
So basically what you're saying is that if you can polish off a quarter bag of chip-its before doing a podcast, and if it's working for you, you may as well keep doing it.
Right. And don't let what somebody else thinks they know get in the way of what you're doing and it's working for you.
Absolutely. Yeah, that makes sense. So the bottom line in the whole thing is if it's working for you, don't stress about it, right? But if it's not working for you, then change it. Change is something drastic. If it's something you really want, you got
to
change it.
And the first thing to do when you're changing is try to decide, am I functioning out of belief or am I functioning out of logic?
Yeah. And accept the fact that change is typically in a way or style that you probably haven't thought of.
Yeah, very, very good point.
All right. Alrighty, I think we've killed this one.
Yeah, I don't even think I know what I'm doing anymore, so.
No, let's just publish this.
All right, so,
you're good.
All right, so for Brad Peel and I'm John Barbin, and that was your Phi Life podcast.